Melissa, I want to thank everybody for coming out this, I guess by this point you could say this late this morning or this afternoon. It's very heartening to see the Beis Medrash full, not just right after Minyan, but really through the day. And so, Yasher Kochachem to you all. And a special thanks, of course, to our guest, Rabbi Sobolowski. Rabbi Sobolowski is a Rosh Yeshiva at the Rabbi Yitzchak Ochanan, Yeshiva University. He's a Rav in Bergenfield, and a very popular and very beloved Rav in the Teaneck Bergenfield community. He's been involved in many different programs related to the community, and I know he's involved in the NCSY Kollel in Eretz Yisrael for many years. We've known each other for many years, more years than I want to care to mention in public, but we go back to high school together, so it's really an extraordinary schus and honor for us to be able to inaugurate our first Kollel Yom Rishon program with Rabbi Sobolowski here this afternoon. I also want to acknowledge and thank Rabbi Michael and Selina Ravinsky for sponsoring this Kollel Yom Rishon program, our inaugural event, and have doing so in memory of Jerry Epstein Soldinger and Paul Epstein, parents of Selina Ravinsky, and his chus for Refuah Shleima for Irvin Ravinsky, Aaron Yehuda ben Chaya Adel. Should have a Refuah. And we thank you and Selina for your generosity and for your support. Rosa, you came this afternoon to hear Rabbi Sobolowski, not me, so I will turn the pulpit over to him.
Rabbi Shulman almost made a little bit light of himself by just saying we happened to be in high school together. What he didn't tell you was that he was my first chavrus in high school. So, and a very good one at that. So we spent that thing. We're trying to reminisce in the car about a year and a half, 2 years or so, learning together in the early years back in high school. So it's really a pleasure. It's close to me to be able to share some words of Torah this morning. About 11 years ago or so, I had the unique privilege to take a group of boys from yeshiva. It was actually literally this time of the year, during the winter break, to Eretz Yisrael. It was during the Shemitah year. And the goal of the trip was that we were going to study the intricacies of Shemitah on two levels. We were going to learn it in the Beis Medrash, that we could have done on Washington Heights also. But we're going to learn it out in the fields also. We're going to go to the greenhouses, we're going to go to the orchards, we're going to go to the kibbutzim, and try to see how does Shemitah really play out in terms of, realistically, in the world in Eretz Yisrael today. So we had some fascinating experiences. Some of them I'll try to make mention and note as we speak a little bit about Shemitah during the course of our shiur this morning. But there was a very fascinating Torah personality who I met there for the first time, a man by the name of Rav Rimon. Some of you may know him. He's a Rav in Alon Shvut in Eretz Yisrael. And I got to meet him a little bit, and he gave a shiur for us. And actually, we invited him to come speak in our shul a couple of years later. And he gave a shiur in our shul. And I want to really introduce today's shiur with a story that he told, a personal story about himself, that I think will put things into the proper perspective. Rabbi Mohn told us that he had arrived in America for a little bit of a visit, a little bit of a trip. And he had gotten hungry, and he walked into some, the equivalent of Bir Makolet, I guess, in Eretz Yisrael, some little bodega, I guess we'd call it, in Washington Heights. And he was looking around for some fruit. And he went over to the apples, and just by rote, just by habit, he started to think of himself, I can't just buy these apples. Are these apples a problem of Orla? Are they not a problem of Orla? Oh, and even if they're not a problem of Orla, are they a problem of Truma and Maestros? And do I have my coin available to separate? And then all of a sudden, he said, he caught himself. And he said, wait a second, I'm in Washington Heights. I'm not in Alon Shvut. And at that moment, he said he lost all desire to eat those apples. So that story is really the story of Moshe Rabbeinu. The Gemara tells us in Maseches Sota that Moshe Rabbeinu davens to Kadosh Baruch Hu. He wants to enter Eretz Yisrael. He wants to enter Eretz Yisrael. For what? All Moshe Rabbeinu wanted was a Jaffa orange. All he wanted was a Carmel tomato. I don't know about in St. Louis, you can get that in Bergenfield also. You can go to the regular stores, you can buy the Israeli products also. So that's why he wanted to go, just to eat the fruit. No, say Chazal, He wanted to go into Eretz Yisrael to fulfill the mitzvahs at Luyas Baretz, to be able to separate Trumas and Maisers properly, to be able to observe Shemitah properly. That was Moshe Rabbeinu's dream. They say in the name of Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, Reb Soloveitchik's grandfather, that when he retired, he just never retired, but if he would have retired in Brisk, he would have left Brisk, gone to Eretz Yisrael, bought himself a little plot of land, planted a couple of trees, and just had the opportunity to fulfill the mitzvahs at Luyas Baretz, the agricultural mitzvahs. So we see that this has been a desire throughout our history, a love, a longing, that for thousands of years was really just a dream. And Baruch Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, has provided for us the opportunity to begin to perform these mitzvahs once again in our day. So I thought it would be apropos to spend a little bit of time trying to familiarize ourselves with these mitzvahs, with a particular emphasis and focus on how these mitzvahs play out bizman hazeh, particularly in our time. Because there are some very basic, important differences between the way these mitzvahs are actually done today in contrast to the way they used to be done in the days of the Beis HaMikdash. Meheri Abana Mikdash, the Beis HaMikdash will come back, so we'll be back in its full glory, so we'll be one step ahead of the game. So let's try to figure out how the mitzvahs were done, how they're done now, and hopefully Meheri Abana Mikdash, what's going to look like in the near future. So we're going to begin with a basic fundamental question, and it almost sounds like a startling question. In order for the mitzvos at Luyas Baretz, the agricultural mitzvos, to apply, we have to be dealing with, of course, Aretz, with Eretz Yisrael. And we have to have what's called Kedushos Eretz Yisrael. The sanctity of the land of Israel has to be intact in order for the mitzvos to be applicable. And this raises a question: what exactly is the status of Kedushos Eretz Yisrael today? Now, we have to be very, very careful when we raise this question. The Chasam Sofer already was sensitive to this point. The Chasam Sofer writes that even though there is a very complicated discussion in the Gemara, some of you who are studying here before may have noticed some of the basic sources as to what the status of the sanctity of Eretz Yisrael is today. Says the Chasam Sofer, this discussion is an agricultural discussion. This discussion relates to, do the mitzvahs of Shemitah apply today? Do the mitzvahs of Truma, giving certain parts to the Kohen, to the Levi, apply today? Min HaTorah, Min DeRabbanan. It's a very important discussion with some very real ramifications. But, says the Chasam Sofer, this in no shape or form impacts on, is Eretz Yisrael a special place? Is Eretz Yisrael the place where Kodesh Baruch Hu's land? Eina Hashem L'kecha Bo, where Kodesh Baruch Hu watches over? Is it the Eretz HaNivcheres? Is it the land that was promised to the Avos? Of course it is, says the Chasam Sofer. Nobody would ever negate, even the Mashu, that Eretz Yisrael is a special and unique place, and it's the Jewish homeland. That's all true, and that's not the subject of today's shiur. Maybe we'll come back another Sunday, we'll talk about that, but that's not today's shiur. Today's shiur is agriculture. Today's shiur is dirt. Today's shiur is about what's going on in the dirt of Eretz Yisrael, what's going on in the ground of Eretz Yisrael. Do the mitzvos at Luyas Baretz apply in full force or not? So the Rambam begins, we'll take a look at the first of the sources, and the Rambam tells us a little bit of a background, almost historical slash halachic discussion as to the sanctity of Eretz Yisrael. Says the Rambam, Kol Shech Ziku Ole Mitzrayim, any area in Eretz Yisrael that was conquered by the door of Yehoshua ben Nun, the people who left Mitzrayim with their children, who actually literally their children who entered into Eretz Yisrael, V'nizkatesh Kedusha Rishona, all of those areas of Eretz Yisrael as described in Sefer Yehoshua were sanctified in what we call in Halacha Kedusha Rishona, the first Kedusha. However, the problem was, Kevin Shagalu, once the Jewish people were exiled, Batla Kedusha Son, then the Kedusha disappeared. Because after all, logically, if the Kedusha was created through what we call Kibush Haaretz, through the physical military conquering of Eretz Yisrael, once that conquest was no longer applicable, it had now been conquered by the Babylonians, so then the Kedushas Haaretz ceased to exist. Shekedusha Rishona, Lefisha Haisa B'nei Kibush Bilvan. The first Kedusha was dependent upon military might. Once it's over, Kitchel L'Shaitav L'O Kitchel L'Esed L'Avo. That Kedusha was intact all the years that the Jewish people were sovereign in their land. Once they were no longer in charge militarily of Eretz Yisrael, the agricultural Kedusha ceased to exist. However, that's not the end of Jewish history. Kevin Sha'ola B'nei Agola, there was a second Kedusha. Once the Jews came back in the days of Ezra, beginning of Ba'isheni, V'chziku B'miktas Haaretz, they took over. Now notice the lashon of the Rambam, the words of the Rambam, they did not conquer Eretz Yisrael, because historically there was no second conquering of Eretz Yisrael. The Jews in the days of Ba'isheni, for the most part, were actually not even sovereign. Most of the time of the period of Ba'isheni, they were under another ruling power. first under the Persians, and then later under the Greeks, then under the Romans. It was a very, very small period of time, at the time of the Cheshbonoim, where there was some degree of autonomy. But, says the Rambam, even though there was no kibush, there was no military conquest, there was what we call a chazaka, there was a yishuv. There were Jews living there. And since the Jews were living there, it was only miktas aretz. They never ever reached the borders of the first time of Yoshua. Kitshua kedusha shniya ha'omedes la'olam l'shayt l'yasod lavo. That second kedusha, which did not depend upon military might, remains intact in full force even until today. So, well, somewhat of a strange thing that the stronger kedusha, it's the higher you go, the harder you fall. The stronger kedusha disappeared. The almost less degree of Kedusha, the Kedusha of Yishuv, of Chazaka, is still intact today. And that's according to many, many opinions, probably most of the opinions in the Rishonim, that's how we assume, that the Kedusha's Eretz Yisrael today is in full force, even agriculturally. Now, it sounds like the corollary of that statement would be that all the mitzvos that emanate from Kedusha's Eretz should now be in full force as well. So the giving of Truma to the Kohen, and the eating of Maaser in Yerushalayim, and the observance of Shemitah, everything should follow in line from that statement of the Rambam. So, not quite. There's a very, very big but to that statement of the Rambam, and that's in the second of the sources, Perek Aleph Halacha Chavav. Says the Rambam, HaTruma Bizman Hazeh, today, the Rambam's writing in the Middle Ages, Truma today, Afilu B'Makam Shesiku Ali Bavel. Even in those parts of Eretz Yisrael which were taken over by the Olei Bavel, namely the main parts of Eretz Yisrael that were inhabited during the period of Bayis Sheni, ve'afilu b'bei Ezra eina min haTorah, even in the days of Ezra himself, in the glory, so to speak, at the beginning of Bayis Sheni, Trumos and Maisras were not min haTorah, ela midivreim, they were only midirabanan. Why should that be so? After all, the Rambam just told us a moment ago that the sanctity is intact min haTorah. Says the Rambam, there is an additional factor that must be present that was not present in the days of Ba'isheni. She'ein lach truma shel Torah ela be'eretz Yisrael. Truma min haTorah only applies in Eretz Yisrael. But here comes the second condition. Uvizman she'ukol Yisrael sham. When the entire Jewish people is there, or at least the significant majority of the Jewish people are there. She'nemar ki savo'u bi'as kulchem kishahoyu birusha rishona. That when the entire Jewish people enters into Eretz Yisrael, then and only then does the obligation of Truma kick in min haTorah. That existed in the days of Bayis Rishon, the days of Yeshua ben Nun. Ukemoshe nasin lachsibusha shlishis. And that's going to happen in the third time. In the days of Mashiach, Klai Yisrael returns to Eretz Yisrael en masse. Lo kishoya birusha shniya shayisim Ezra. Not the way it was in the days of Ezra. Shayisim bias miktsasan. It was a very, very small percentage of 40,000. That of the vast majority of the Jewish people remained behind in Bavel. And therefore, Truma did not apply min haTorah even in the days of Bayis Sheni itself. How much more so today? V'chein yirah li, says the Rambam, that not only is this true vis-a-vis Truma, shehu adin me'maiser. This is also true for Maiser. We'll get to the details in a moment. Truma is the gift of the agriculture that's given to the Kohen. Maiser are, some of it is given to the Levi, sometimes to the poor people, sometimes eating yourself. Again, we'll talk about the intricacies of that in a moment. All of the above, Trumos and Maisers, all of the gifts, all of the tithing, everything, hakol mikol kol, is only midirabanan. She'ein chayavim ben bezman hazeh, ela midivreim kitruma. That only, Bizman Sheh, you're in Eretz Yisrael, and the Jewish people on Mas are in Eretz Yisrael, then and only then can Trumas and Maisers be min haTorah. Now again, it does not mean we don't have to observe these Dinim today. It doesn't mean that we can buy Pradus from Eretz Yisrael and don't have to worry about Trumas and Maisers. We do have to be concerned, but only on a level of Derabbanan, on a rabbinic level, because min haTorah, on a pure biblical level, so these halachas do not apply, because we are lacking that second critical component of Bias Kulchem, the entire Jewish people being present in Eretz Yisrael. There is a fascinating discussion that has been raised very recently, is this phenomenon going to change? Are the demographics going to change very, very quickly? When we speak about all of Klal Yisrael, every last Jew, we have a rule called Ruba Kakula. If you have a majority, that's considered to be like as if everybody's there. Do we have a majority of Jews living in Eretz Yisrael? So the answer is not yet, but the answer is soon. The way the numbers look, so Mi'atz Hashem, soon, very soon, that the numbers are going to tilt, and we're actually going to reach the point of what's called the majority of Rove of Klal Yisrael living in Eretz Yisrael. And now the question becomes, do we have to reevaluate our entire Shia? we're going to say certain things in the course of the Shiur that are predicated in the assumption that Trumos and Maestros, these mitzvahs don't apply min HaTorah, they only apply min Rabbanan. That may not be true, because once we reach the point of Rov Yisrael and Eretz Yisrael, things may change. So, truth to be told, that's not so simple. That just because you happen to get a statistical majority, you're one person over. It's almost like, you know, when you have, they have these things in the supermarkets, the millionth customer. So when he comes in, he gets his free something. So the millionth person who's going to stand at Ben-Gurion Airport, he's gonna be our passport control. They say, you're the guy. You're the one who just was mechayev of us. You just obligated us on Trumos and Maisos min HaTorah. So probably not. So the Chazon Ish says that the image that the Rambam is describing of Bias Kulchem means when Klal Yisrael, the Jewish people, come en masse, when there's a whole entering into Eretz Yisrael, like the original model of Yehoshua ben Nun, not that they trickle in, you know, over the course of 100 years, and then we happen to be at this particular point in time, so we have 50.01% of the Jews here, and now all of a sudden, Trumos and Maisos start min HaTorah. So the Chazon Ish didn't think that was correct. He thought that in order to create that model, you almost require, like Yerusha Shlishis, you almost require, like, the notion of a complete Kibbutz Goliath, Binyan Beis HaMikdash, Mashiach, that model that the Rambam seems to be alluding to. So again, we'll find out, we'll wait and see what happens. Maybe about a Mikdash will be able to answer that question quickly. But I'm getting back to our Sugya. So basically what we've developed here is that there are two conditions necessary for the mitzvos, at least bar, it's agricultural mitzvos of Trumos and Maestros to be relevant, min HaTorah. One is being in Eretz Yisrael, so that we for sure have. Having Kedushas Eretz Yisrael, that of course we have. But the second condition of Bias Kulchem, having most of the Jewish people there, so that, at least as of now, we for sure don't have, and maybe not even halachically, again, depending on that issue that the Chazon Ish raised. So, again, this doesn't take away from the fact that Trumos and Maestros, the giving of the gifts to the Kohen, Maestro, etc., have to still be observed, but it does put it down to the level of the Rabbanan, according to most opinions, those who follow the view of the Rambam. So let's put Trumos and Maestros aside for a moment, and let's talk about another one of the agricultural mitzvahs we mentioned before, the mitzvah of Shemitah. So we know that every 7 years, one is not permitted to work the land in Eretz Yisrael, and there are a whole series of halachas that govern the produce that grows in Eretz Yisrael during Shemitah. Some of the produce cannot be eaten, some of the produce can be eaten in certain limited ways, some of it has to be treated with kedusha, with sanctity. Those who have been in Eretz Yisrael during the Shemitah year may have either some fond memories or not such fond memories of what we used to call the Pach Shemitah. The Pach Shemitah, literally the garbage cans of Shemitah. Some people didn't like that name. They thought it was a degradation for the fruit of Shemitah. But it basically refers to the fact that anything that grows in Shemitah has kedusha, sanctity to it, so you can't throw it out. So if you're eating an apple and you finish half the apple, so you can't throw it into the regular garbage. You have to put it aside and wait till it rots by itself, and then only then it can be discarded. I had the unique opportunity to be learning in Keren B'Yavneh during a end of a Shemitah year, where all the fruit was coming from Kedusha Shviyas, from the sanctity of Shemitah. And I remember piles and piles of fruit that sat for quite some time. I think by now it's been discarded. It's better been 4 Shemitahs or so since then. But in order to observe these mitzvahs, Kedas Chadin. So again, Shemitah in Eretz Yisrael means a lot for the farmers, means a lot for the consumers as well. So how does this play out today? Do these halachas apply min HaTorah? Or is Shemitah also only of rabbinic nature today? So following the rules that we just mentioned, well, let's look at the conditions. We have Kedushas Haaretz. We follow the view of the Rambam that there is full-fledged Kedusha. The sanctity is in full force. So we presumably do have Kedushas Haaretz today. And even though the Rambam insisted that for Truma and Maaser to exist min HaTorah, you have to have Bias Kulchem, you have to have the majority of the Jewish people there, do we find that condition vis-a-vis Shemitah? At least not explicitly, we do not. So maybe one could argue that Shemitah today could actually be min HaTorah. So the giving of the Trumas and the Maestras, that we'll talk about practically how we do that in a moment, but the Trumas and the Maestras may only be mid the Rabbanim, according to the view of the Rambam. Maybe Shemitah would in fact be min HaTorah. Now, this is not just a theoretical question. This is a, you know, I'm not exaggerating when I say this is a multi-million, then some question, because many of the things that take place in Eretz Yisrael today in terms of Shemitah are working with a basic fundamental assumption that Shemitah today is only mid-Rabbanan. If one would take the strict view that the observance of Shemitah in Eretz Yisrael today would be min haTorah, then many, many of the leniencies and many, many of the different ways to almost get around certain aspects of Shemitah would literally go up in smoke. One of course, the most popular one being a very controversial one, what we call today the Heta Mechira. The Heta Mechira has been around already for quite some time, well over 100 years. It was a device that was put into place back in the end of the 1800s when the Jewish community began to develop agriculturally in Eretz Yisrael. And some Rabbanim were of the opinion that one can actually sell the land of Eretz Yisrael to a non-Jew for the Shemitah year, thereby, in a sense, circumventing the entire mitzvah of Shemitah. And the farmers could work, and the consumers don't have to worry, and everything is fine. It's basically, we just turned it into non-Shemitah in its entirety. Again, many of you may be familiar, this is a very, very controversial leniency. It was actually a very loaded controversy, which has not let up until this very day. This is one of those machloksim that's been going on for about 150 years or so. There were those who were in favor of it, there were those who were very, very much opposed to it, and then there were those, kind of like everything else in life, there were those a little bit in the middle. But the basic fundamental premise of the entire Heter Mechira is working with the assumption that Shemitah today is only midirabbanan. If Shemitah today would be min haTorah, then the notion of selling Eretz Yisrael to non-Jews to circumvent Shemitah would be a non-starter. So anyone who wants to rely on any leniencies whatsoever vis-a-vis Shemitah has to be very convinced that Shemitah today is derabbanan. Well, what is it that makes Shemitah derabbanan? According to the logic that we just presented, we're not quite sure why should that be so. So the answer is it's based on the third of the sources, and that's the Gemara in Maseches Gittin. The Gemara quotes a braisa, the Sanya Rebbe Omer, v'zeh devar ha-shmita shamot. The Torah in Parshas Re'eh speaks about almost a dual form of Shemitah. The seventh year, there are two things. Zeh devar ha-shmita shamot. What does that mean? B'shtei shmitas akosa medaber. The Torah is alluding to two different shmitas. There are two different sets of rules concerning Shemitah. Acha shmitas karka, v'acha shmitas ksofim. One refers to the Shemitah relates to the land, and one relates to debts, the monetary debts. The halacha is that at the end of the Shemitah year, so then all debts are canceled. So you may remember a couple of years ago, everyone was probably running around Erev Rosh Hashanah and riding a prusbul. A prusbul is a mechanism that Chacham instituted to, in a sense, circumvent some of the halachas of Shemitah's Ksofim. If you hand over your debts to an authorized court, so then the court, the Beis Din, is permitted to collect those debts for you. So most communities today, people write en masse. People who have people all the money don't have. It's kind of like part of the routine on Erev Rosh Hashanah. I remember a couple of years ago, it was the year after the Shemitah. It was the year after the year of writing Prusbuls that I got a call from somebody who was a little bit confused that they want to know, Rabbi, is it too late to write a Shemitah, to write a Prusbul? It's not too late for 7 years from now. They thought, they got confused. They thought that every Erev Rosh Hashanah, it's kind of Hataras Tadarim, you go to the Mikveh Erev Rosh Hashanah, you have to write a Prusbul. So no. It's only once every 7 years you have to write a Prusbul. So we put together these very strange but they didn't. This past Matzah Shemitah. So the last Prusbul that I wrote was actually Erev Rosh Hashanah in the mikvah. And somebody came through here, Rosh Hashanah, not literally in the water, but literally mamish right outside the mikvah. Somebody came, Rabbi Gavalt, we forgot to write a puzzle, no problem. Pulled together two guys on the spot, we put together a base then, and we could do a Taras Tadarim for you also for the same price, and we put together your puzzle. So the Gemara tells us that there are two points of Shemitah. There's agricultural Shemitah, there's land Shemitah, and there's monetary Shemitah, and it's a package deal. Bizman shetah mishamit karka, atah mishamit ksofim. That only when land Shemitah applies, then monetary Shemitah applies. Bizman she'yata mishamit karka, when the land Shemitah doesn't apply, yata mishamit ksofim. Then there's no Shemitah on money either. And the question is, what does that phrase mean? What is the land Shemitah? So I would imagine that most people probably thought that the land Shemitah refers to working the land during the Shemitah year. Don't feel bad if you thought that way, because that's what Rashi says also. But I deliberately left Rashi off the sources, because most of the authorities actually offer a second interpretation, and that's the interpretation of Rabbeinu Tam. So we're going to skip to the fourth of the sources, and we're going to read the previous source through the eyes of Rabbeinu Tam. V'nir l'Rabbeinu Tam, de'ashmatas karka de'hocha de'hosam, lo'ayir b'charisho z'riya. It does not refer to planting and plowing. Elabisados achozos labailim beyovel, a whole another ball game. It refers to the Jubilee year, to the Yovel year, the 50th year. The halacha is that every 50 years, so if I sold my land, my family estate, so then the land comes back to me at the Yovel year. That is Hashmatas Karka. Vashmatas Karka Karli Yovel, Ulishvias Ashmatas Ksafim, the Shmit Meshmatas Ksafim Vlo Yovel. So basically Rabbeinu Tam explains, we're gonna leave out some of the intricacies of Rabbeinu Tam's proof for now. Rabbeinu Tam basically explains that what the Gemara is driving at is as follows, that there are two different mitzvos that are very much linked to one another. One is the observance of Yovel, the laws governing the 50th year, and one is the laws governing the 7th year. The 7th year include debts being canceled, not allowed to work the land, produce has sanctity, etc. Says Rabbeinu Tam, Shemitah and Yovel are a package deal. If Yovel applies, then Shemitah applies. And if Yovel, for whatever reason, doesn't apply, then Shemitah doesn't apply as well. Why would one think that there's no Yovel today? For a very simple reason. The Torah tells us in Parshas Bahar, Ukrasim dror ba'aretz l'chol yoshveha, one of the most famous psukim in American history. It's the pasuk that's on the Liberty Bell. Shall declare liberty throughout the land unto all the inhabitants thereof. I think I got it right. Okay. So the Gemara tells us that Yovel, where that pasuk appears, depends upon what's called Kol Yoshve Aleha. Similar notion we said before, the whole Jewish people has to be there. And if the Jewish people are not there en masse, then there's no Yovel. And guess what, says Rabbeinu Tam? If there's no Yovel, then there's no Shemitah either. Even though the Gemara speaks about the observance of Shemitah today, says Rabbeinu Tam, that's b'derabbanan, that's rabbinic in nature. So what we just did is, we basically took three mitzvos that we thought were min haTorah, and we just knocked each one down a notch. The giving of truma to the Kohen, we thought was min haTorah, because Eretz Yisrael has sanctity today. It's not min haTorah, it's b'derabbanan. Maaser, the giving to the Levi, or the eating in Yerushalayim, different parts of Maaser, we'll talk about in a moment. So we thought that's Min HaTorah, because after all, we have sanctity of Eretz Yisrael. Guess what? It's only Midrabbanan. Even Shemitah, we were holding on for dear life, we thought that would be Min HaTorah. Guess what? That's also Midrabbanan. So we have a lot of mitzvos Midrabbanan to observe, a lot of agricultural mitzvos. We have a lot to daven for, Meheri Abana Mikdash, where everything should go back to being Min HaTorah. But the world that we live in right now, we're going to be assuming for the rest of today's shiur that all of the above are midirabanan. Truma is derabanan, Maaser is derabanan, Shemitah is derabanan. Doesn't mean we don't have to observe it. Doesn't mean we don't have to be meticulous in this area of halacha. We observe dinim derabanan with the same degree of, literally the same degree halachically, but we observe mitzvahs derabanan, obviously, in full force. So we are going to observe these mitzvahs properly. But we're going to observe them on a level of the Rabbanan. There are going to be some important differences, important ramifications. One that we mentioned before, the institution of the Hetter Mechira cannot even begin to be discussed unless you work with this premise that Shemitah today is the Rabbanan. It doesn't mean, therefore, it's okay because it's the Rabbanan, therefore it's controversial still, but it's not even up for negotiation if Shemitah would have been Min HaTorah. So now we got almost a little bit of the background, the theoretical background, the abstract background, the lambda, so to speak. Let's make a little bit of a shift now into the world of halacha l'maisa. What does this mean for us, tachlis, practical, today? So how do I go about observing truma today? How do I go about observing maisa today? How do I keep shvita? How do I do these things? So we said it's not minatoris, it's midrabanan, but how do we go about doing it, and just how different is it from days of old? So let's take a look at the fifth of the sources, where the Shulchan Aruch, you can probably get a good sense that we're about to switch from the theoretical to the practical because the types of the Makoros just switched. We went from Rambams and Gemaras and Tosism into Shulchan Aruch. So Shulchan Aruch means this is the bottom line. This is how it's going to play out practically for us. So comes the Shulchan Aruch and tells us, Truma Gedola, the first of the gifts that have to be given from any produce that grows in Eretz Yisrael. Now this is true if I'm eating that produce in Eretz Yisrael or if I'm eating that produce out of Eretz Yisrael. There are some things that come from Eretz Yisrael to America, and it gets very, very tricky. Some of the things, the proper trumas and maisos were taken off, many of them were not. So I don't want to take a stand here, I have to refer to the local VOD in terms of the kashas intricacies, but this is something anytime I strongly encourage people should buy and should support the economy of Eretz Yisrael. We should eat the fruit of Eretz Yisrael. It's a beautiful, wonderful thing, but we should do it properly, up yalach. We should learn how to separate trumas and maisos if and when that is necessary. So here the Shulchan Aruch tells us that the first of the trumos that has to be separated in anything that grows in Eretz Yisrael is Truma Gedola. Now Truma Gedola in the olden days was a gift to the Kohen. And it was a beautiful, wonderful institution. The Kohen would collect the Truma, he could eat the Truma, everything was great. So that's not going to happen today. He is not going to eat the Truma for two reasons. Number one, he is Tommy. Number two, the Truma is Tommy. So that's two strikes against you. So because we are ritually impure today, we have no way of purifying ourselves in its entirety. Even going to the mikveh would not be effective because any person who ever came into contact with a dead body, ever went to a funeral, cemetery, etc., so is automatically considered to be ritually impure. And we have to wait for a para aduma, for a red cow. I know every couple of months or so you see on the news and see, oh, there's a, they found this paraduma, that paraduma. We're still waiting. I've heard a lot of false alarms. We're still waiting for the paraduma. But bottom line is, we assume everybody today is tamei, and the truma is for sure tamei, and therefore there's very little that the kohen could actually do with it. It's for this reason that we don't give a significant amount of truma today. In the olden days, you had to give a real amount of truma. You had to give either a 40th, a 50th, or a 60th, depending on just how nice and person you are. So you have to give a real significant amount of the produce to the kohen, so he should actually have something to do with it. Today, we don't do that anymore, because the kohen's not going to do anything. He's going to burn it. He's going to throw it out. He's not going to use it anyway, because it's tamei. And therefore, truma gedola, bizman hazeh omedes l'shreif b'nei hatuma shiur kol shehu. All you have to do is take off a very, very small amount. And that's exactly what we do in Eretz Yisrael today. We take off really a very, very small amount. And that small amount is not actually even given to the kohen anymore. It's actually discarded. It can be discarded in multiple ways. One way could actually be burnt. That would be one way. Or, it's not always so convenient to do that, it could be wrapped up nicely in a mechubad way, in a proper, respectful way, and then basically thrown out. So you can't take truma and just toss it into the regular garbage, similar to the prayers, the fruit of Shemitah that we said. It has to be discarded properly. There is another fascinating way to potentially use truma today, and that is if a kohen owns an animal. Even though the truma is tamei, the animal can eat truma that is tamei. So that would be an interesting idea. So at one time, I don't know whether this is still practiced anymore, but at one time, so the zoo in Eretz Yisrael, it was called the Biblical Zoo, used to actually, they had a deal with Tenuva that all the truma that was coming would actually be delivered. And those who may remember, the Biblical Zoo, the Gan HaChayot, Tanachi used to be actually right next to Tenuva in the old smooths in the last couple of decades. But in the old days, it was actually right near the Tachna Merkazit. They were next to each other. They would actually deliver some of the produce, and it would go to the animals, and the animals in the zoo were actually owned by a kohen. So they were machrim, the little mechiras behemah. So all the elephants in the Gan HaChayot were owned by Mr. Kohen, and he was eating lekayim hashenemar, kohen ki kinen nefesh kinen kaspo, so the behemahs could eat the truma. I don't know whether that is still being done today. So after truma, which kind of a little bit of a letdown, because we're not really separating all that much, and we're not even giving it to the kohen, but you have to separate it. You can't take the attitude, we're not going to separate it, because if you don't separate it, then the food is not kosher. The food is what's called an halacha tevel. So if the proper matanos, so the proper gifts were not separated, even though they weren't literally given to the kohen or the levi, one is not permitted at all to partake of that fruit. So the truma is going to be separated, but practically speaking, we're not going to do all that much with it. Then we could skip down. It's the same in the fifth of the sources. We'll skip to the bold print, which is the Shulchan Aruch. V'yacharkach mafrish min ashar. Then one separates echad me'asara, one-tenth. And that number, one-tenth, doesn't change today, because that number appears in the Chumash. The amount of truma doesn't appear in the Torah itself, so you really almost have an option to give as much as you want. Today we're going to give almost a minuscule amount. But Maiser, as its name connotes, Maiser means one-tenth. So you have to give a tenth. So today you also have to give a tenth. Hu nikra Maiser, Risha v'nosto l'levi. And you're supposed to give that to the Levi. V'yeshom him off the Kohen. There are those who say you can actually give it to a Kohen also, because if you think about it, every Kohen is really a Levi, because every Kohen came from the Sheva, from the tribe of Levi. That's a whole discussion in the Gemara, and the Rishonim, whether we should or should not give it to a Kohen. But the Maiser, you can give it for sure to a Levi, and that can be done, bizman hazeh, today's world, and should be done. Because unlike Truma, Maiser Rishon does not have Kedusha to it. There is no sanctity to it, and there are no limitations on eating it, and it can be even in the state of impurity. So in fact, that's what the Shulchan Aruch says, V'al zeh nema b'torah, ki es masa b'nei Yisrael, v'livnei levi n'asat is called masa b'Yisrael v'gomer. So one is supposed to separate one-tenth of all one's produce in Eretz Yisrael and actually give it to the levi. Has anybody actually ever done this? Actually given it to the levi? I know many people have probably separated trumas and maestros, but many people don't give it to the actual levi today. And the question is, where does that practice come from? So there are those who want to suggest that it's a very, very questionable practice. There are those who suggest that, let's not forget, maaser rishon doesn't have any real sanctity to it. It's not a davar kadosh, and actually a non-levi is allowed to eat it. The only problem is that monetarily, you owe it to the levi. It's the levi's property. So you have no right to steal the levi's produce. So there are some who suggest, well, how do you know for certain that the levi is really a levi? I mean, he thinks it's a levi. His father told him it's a levi. His grandfather, we hope he's a levi. But maybe in the back of our minds, I can turn around and say to him, you know what? prove to be the Alevi. I'll prove to be Alevi. But I have my Ksav Yichos back from Kahas. I'm a Levi. I don't know if I'm a Levi or not. So there are those who suggest that we call a Motzim Mechavel of a Raya. I'm not obligated to give it to him because he has to prove that he's a Levi. And many don't approve of that. Many say it should actually be given. Now, the Levi, in turn, has a right to do whatever he wants. He could eat it, or he could actually give it back to if he wants, or he could share it with his non-Levium friends. That's perfectly okay because it doesn't have any sanctity to it, but it really should be given to the Levi. So actually, we had the opportunity this past summer in Entzias Lekolo. So my older son, we were davening in Ramot by relatives for Shabbos, and he found on the bulletin board advertisement saying, come and separate Trumas and Maestros in a vineyard. And he was all excited, so he schlepped me along. So two of us went one day to harvest our own grapes. We bought a share of the grapes, and we had the opportunity to do the other mitzvahs that we are not even have a chance to talk about today, the gifts to the aniyim, to the poor people. We gave leket and shichu and peah and olulos and the works. If you want to have it somewhere on my phone, I have the video on it somewhere. Maybe during the break, we'll see if we can track it down. But one of the many things that we had the opportunity to do was that we actually took the grapes, and we separated truma and discarded the truma appropriately, and we actually gave the ma'isa to a Levi. So we had, I think, two Levium at the time, and it's just like Kolo, who were walking around with these huge bunches of grapes. We were Mekayim HaShenemar, as the Shulchan just quoted, Kis Masa B'nei Yisrael, V'nei Levi Nasatis K'masa B'Yisrael. So if you want to collect your Levium stuff, you got to hang out with the right people. You got to make sure you find someone who's willing to actually give you the Ma'aser Rishon. Many people in Eretz Yisrael are not running to give Ma'aser Rishon. But again, the more proper thing, the more correct thing to do is actually give the Ma'aser Rishon to the Levi. Then one continues. We continue back in the Shulchan Aruch. V'acharkach mafresh me'ashar echad me'asarav unikra Ma'aser Sheni. Then one takes off a second tenth, and that's called Ma'aser Sheni. V'hu labaylov. And you get to keep it, and you get to eat it. We'll see a little bit later what exactly you do with it today. But in theory, you get to eat it. And later on, the Shulchan Aruch will explain what do you do with that practically today. And that's what the Chumash means, aser to aser. There is a seven-year agricultural cycle in Halacha. The first year and the second year, the fourth year and the fifth year is what we just described. One ma'isa to the Levi, one ma'isa that you eat by yourself, but of al b'shlishis v'shishis v'shavua, the third and the sixth year, achashim mafrishin ma'isa rishon, mafrishin me'ashar ma'isa rishon, v'nosam la'aniyim v'nikra ma'isa ani. During the third and the sixth year, so rather than taking that second ma'isa and eating it yourself, you give it to the aniyim, you give it to the poor people. So we had the opportunity this past summer, which was actually the end of the ma'isa ani year, so the grapes that we had were third year fruit. So we did not separate ma'isa sheni, rather we separated ma'isa ani, and we actually gave it to the aniyim. Now we did it in a way that we had brought all the grapes back to us to Moshav Beit Meir, which is why Kola was stationed. So it's a little bit embarrassing to go up to people and tell them, oh, here's a couple of grapes. But we had a setup, there was a way that was arranged that there were some of the people were working in the kitchen who are known to be in difficult financial straits. So it was a way that was set up, they didn't know we were, and they were, and somebody was in charge of bringing all the grapes, and they were more than happy to bring the grapes home, made themselves some grape juice out of it, or wine, whatever they made out of it, and we were able to fulfill the mitzvah kedas u'chadin of giving of ma'aser ani. So we lucked out to have that year being the third year. If we do the same thing next year, then we have to worry about ma'aser sheni, figure out how to do that.
So the Ma'aser Rishon
doesn't have Kedusha to it, so you have to separate it, and then you can either give it to the Levi, or according to those who say you're allowed to keep it yourself.
Or you can keep it yourself.
According to those who are not concerned with the mominous aspect, they'll keep it by themselves. With the Truma, you can't really do anything with it because that's Kedusha to it.
Yeah. Trumas,
right, Trumas Ma'aser. It's interesting, the Shulchan Aruch in that line left out Trumas Ma'aser. He talks about it in other places. You would, before you give the Ma'aser Sheni, you have to separate a tenth of the tenth and dispose of that the same you would separate Truma. You're correct, 100%. Right. Let's move on now to the back of the page to the sixth of the sources, where the Shulchan Aruch now walks us through what to do with Ma'aser Sheni during four out of the 6 years. Ma'aser Sheni Nechala Ba'ilav Afnim Yechomis Yerushalayim sounds wonderful. Ma'aser Sheni is eaten within the walls of Yerushalayim. Shenema Ve'chalt Lefnei Hashem Lekech Makom HaShiyivchar V'noeg B'fnei Abayis V'shlo B'fnei Abayis. The halachas apply whether there is a Beis HaMikdash, no Beis HaMikdash. It sounds wonderful. We're getting ourselves all ready to go to eat Ma'aser Sheni. Not so fast. It applies during today, Bizman HaChorban, Aval Eino Nechal B'Shalayim El B'Fnei Abayis. But Nebuch, you can't eat it. So you have to separate it, and now you're not allowed to eat it. Unless it's a base of Mikdash, you're not allowed to eat Maisa Sheini. Shenema Maisa Dugan Chetirosh Chavitzarecha V'Choros B'Chorav Chesanecha. The Torah puts together the eating of Maisa Sheini together with the offering of Karbanos. B'Pi HaShmuel Lomdu, we have a tradition. When the Rambam uses the phrase B'Pi HaShmuel, it means we have a tradition all the way back to Moshe Rabbeinu. Ma'b'chor Eino Nechal B'Fnei Abayis Af Maisa Sheini Lo Yochal B'Fnei Abayis. Just as you can't bring certain karbanos, all karbanos for that matter, you can't bring unless it's a base of mikdash. You cannot eat ma'aser sheni unless it's a base of mikdash. There are other reasons why we couldn't eat ma'aser sheni today anyway. We're tamei and it's tamei. And ma'aser sheni, unlike ma'aser rishon, does have sanctity to it. So basically, we have three strikes against us. There is no eating of ma'aser sheni today. So what do we do with it? Now again, it's not like that little minuscule amount of truma. It's ma'aser. It has to be a tenth. So here we had 100 apples. And we took off a little bit for truma, took off a tenth for ma'aser rishon, we took off a truma's ma'aser, and now we have this a whole bunch of apples, and what are we doing with it? Throw it into the garbage. So here the Torah gives us a break. The Torah says in Parashas Re'eh, we can redeem the ma'aser sheni. We can transfer the value of the ma'aser sheni onto coins, and in the olden days, you would actually bring those coins to Yerushalayim, buy fruit there, and eat that fruit with sanctity in Yerushalayim. So that part we can't do today, but the redeeming part we can do. And the Gemara tells us, at least the way most opinions interpret it, that not only can we redeem it, but we don't even have to give the exact value. Because who are we cheating? Otherwise, it's going to go to the garbage. We can't eat it anyway. So I could take $100,000 worth of my sheni. Tanufa's got $100,000 worth of my sheni, and redeem it, believe it or not, unto one pruta. Onto one tiny little coin. All of the sanctity should go of that ma'aser sheni onto the coin. And now, what do I do with that coin? It's kadosh. It's holy. I can't use it to buy food with. So the seventh of the sources, Bizman Hazeh, what do we do? Imratza liftos ma'aser sheni shavim mana b'pruta. It can be worth $1,000 on one pruta. That's okay. Lechatchili can do that. Toda umashlich pruta liyam hagadol. And then you have to discard that coin to throw into the ocean. Well, the Gemara sometimes speaks about Yoluch Liyam HaMelech, throw into the Dead Sea. Throw it somewhere where no one's ever going to get it again. So we do that today in Eretz Yisrael. This is common practice. And even in Chutz La'aretz, this is common practice. People who buy Israeli produce, so have to observe this halacha properly. It gets a little bit tricky, and it's a little bit beyond the scope right now. It gets a little bit tricky about the setting up of a coin properly today, depending on the value of the fruit and the value of the coin. It gets a little bit difficult. But what I do is as follows, is that one of the Rabbanim in New York, Rabbi Mordechai Willig, designated the specific coins that to be used for the pidyon of Ma'aser Sheni, for the redeeming of Ma'aser Sheni, and he gives permission to all the shul members. I've been out of a shul for about 30 years or so, but he gave me permission. He told me I can keep on giving permission, and I can grant permission to other people as well. So I hereby hand over this right to Rabbi Shulman, can hand over to everyone in St. Louis, the entire Midwest, whoever wants to use Rabbi Willick's coins. So if and when you ever get around to being pulled in Ma'aser Sheni, so I'm sure Rabbi Shulman will lead you with the nusach, and basically the redemption will take place in those coins. That way you don't have to worry about getting rid of those coins. When do we get rid of those coins? So the halacha is at the end of the third, the end of the sixth year, those different times of the cycle, those coins must be completely discarded. How do you do that? You can go to the ocean, throw it to the ocean, or go to the Yam HaMelech, or if you can come up with some other way of really completely, totally destroying those coins. So we have every year in Yeshiva, and if I'm not mistaken, I think it's coming up this year, we do it right before Pesach, because it's the end of the third year, into the fourth year already, we have what's called Bir Ma'aser Sheni. We actually destroy all the Ma'aser Sheni coins. We do it in a little bit of high-tech way. We do it in the YU Chem Lab with hydrochloric acid. So we, believe it or not, so though if you happen to be in New York a week before Pesach, that's going to be done. It's a bi-six-year event. Rabbi Willig is the one who has the schus. He wears the special, you know, goggles, and he throws it in, and it goes poof, and Shalom Yisrael. We even raised the question whether it's legal to do that, because you're not allowed to destroy money. We were informed, again, this is maybe the lawyers here may disagree, but the legal response that we got was that it's okay, because it's the same as those when they make those pennies, that they, you know, they crush the pennies to get your name and all that kind of stuff. So as long as you're not destroying it with intent to destroy the currency, in the sense of you're trying to show that you don't like the government, but you're just doing it for other personal fun reasons or religious reasons, something like that, as long as it's not being done as an act of rebellion against the United States Treasury, so Meikar Adin, I think the poskim are mekel, so we are mekel to destroy the coins in that way. Ma'aser Sheni is also the Rabbanan, Bizman Hazeh, according to the Rambam at least, because the same, because you don't have. Rebbe Shulchan Aruch is just telling you that these are the psukim that in theory are the sources, and then Bezman Hazeh, we're going to do only going to do it mitrabanan. There are some Rishonim who say that all Tumas Maaseh is derais Bezman Hazeh. Not everyone agrees to the Rambam's view about that you need Kol Yishvel. That's not so partial at all. But again, we've been working with the assumption that it's only derabanan. So up until now, we've been focusing primarily on Trumos Maestros. We mentioned a little bit about Shemitah. There are a few other mitzvahs at least Baretz that are a little bit shaky because we're not quite sure whether they're actually limited to Eretz Yisrael proper. If we take a look at the eighth of the sources, the Gemara Maseches Kedushin raises a question about the mitzvah of Orla. Orla, Torah tells us in Parshas Kedoshim, the first 3 years of fruit, one is not permitted to eat, one is not permitted to derive any benefit from. Then the fourth year actually has a certain degree of kedusha to it, similar to Ma'aser Shein. And then the fifth year, you can start to eat it normally. But the first 3 years, it's completely and totally off limits, both in terms of eating and deriving benefit. So the Mishnah tells us a very strange thing in Maseches Kedushin, that Orla applies in Chutz Laaretz, which is startling to us, because Trumas, Ma'aser, Shemitah, everything we were talking about doesn't apply outside of Eretz Yisrael. But Orla is an exception to the rule. Why is that? So the Gemara tells us in the eighth of the sources, Am Rabbi Asi, Am Rabbi Yochanan, Orla b'chutz loretz, halacha l'moshe misinai. It's a special tradition, a special oral tradition, doesn't appear in the Chumash, that Orla does apply in chutz loretz. So some of you may be wondering, wait a second, I never heard of this. I go to the store, I buy apples, I buy oranges, I never thought to check and see. Now in Eretz Yisrael, you're probably familiar with if you go and buy fruit in Eretz Yisrael, so you see these big signs that say, Huf for shoot, Trumas and Maestros, Trumas and Maestros taken off, Naki Mechashash Orla, there's no concern of Orla, or during the Shemitah years, you'll see other signs on it. So I never walked into a shop, and I've shop rights around in St. Louis, and I've been shop right out back east. I never walked into a shop right, I never saw anybody sitting around and tuppling with apples. That's how we started the whole story with Ravi Mom. You buy an apple in the store, nobody thinks about Orla today. Why is that? So the Gemara continues. Amalei Rabbi Zeir Rabbi Asi, V'atanya Sofik Orla Ba'aretz Asa B'Suria Mutar. How come the Braisa teaches us that if you're not sure whether something is Orla in Eretz Yisrael, you have to be strict? Suria refers to literally to Syria. It's the parts that are adjacent to Eretz Yisrael. It's partially Eretz Yisrael, partially Chutz Laaretz, but it's Mutar. The bottom line is if you're not sure whether it's Orla, you're permitted to eat it. How could that be? So Ishtomim Kishachada. So Rabbi Yochanan, I'm sorry, Rabbi Asi thought about it for a moment. That this was actually part of the halacha Moshe Messina. There was a special, unique tradition that even though in all areas of halacha, when we're dealing with dinim and haTorah, we have to be strict, but when it comes to orlos chutz la'aretz, we have a right to be lenient. And what you don't know doesn't hurt you. So if you're not sure whether it's orla, it's okay. Not only is it okay, you don't even have to try to find out whether it's orla. There's no need to look. If you happen to know for a fact that it's orla, then you cannot eat it, min haTorah. Even in St. Louis. But if you don't know, it's considered to be perfectly permissible, and that's, of course, what we do. That's why nobody goes and tries to investigate. Nobody cares. Nobody looks to try to figure out whether it's oil in Eretz Yisrael. You have to figure out that it's not oil in Chutz Laaretz. It's perfectly acceptable. One time, I had the opportunity to almost fulfill the mitzvah of oilless vaday in Chutz Laaretz. The Gemara tells us that if a non-Jew brings you fruit, you're not obligated to ask him whether it's oil. But if he tells you, once he tells you, then you can't eat it. But you're not supposed to, you don't have to ask him. I had a next-door neighbor, not in Bergenfeld, we used to live in Paramus, and I had a next-door neighbor, non-Jewish next-door neighbor, and he was so excited to bring me, I just planted like some berries or something that had just grown, and he's telling me, I got some old berries, some new berries. And I said, stop, I don't want to hear anymore, don't tell me. I don't want to hear how many years old these berries are. I didn't say exactly those words, but that was the basic gist. Thank you so much, I ate the berries. But if he would have finished the sentence and told me, these are for my new berries, that would be a problem. That would be awesome in HaTorah of Orla's Chutz Laaretz. Again, strange opportunity to fulfill the mitzvah of Orla, even in Chutz Laaretz. There is another mitzvah that's also, we do observe it in Chutz Laaretz, even though it also is agricultural in nature. And that's if you take a look at the ninth of the sources. The Shulchan Aruch tells us in Simen Shin Chav Beis, Ein chayavim bechala min HaTorah, ela b'Eretz Yisrael b'lvad. The mitzvah of separating challah, that's already something much closer to home. Person's baking, making a dough, and halacha tells us that you have to separate a small part of that dough, and in the olden days, that would actually go to the Kohen. It's almost like truma. It's treated basically the equivalent of truma. Today, that's not an option, again, for similar reasons in terms of tuma. And therefore, we discard the challah. Either we burn the challah or something. That's not practical. Other ways of discarding the challah. But the halacha is that challah only applies in Eretz Yisrael min ha-Torah. Shenema v'yah ba'achochem l'achmaret. It's agricultural. It only applies to things that grew in the ground. Uvizman shekoy Yisrael sham, similar to what we said before, only when the Jewish people are there en masse. Shenema v'achem. Not just a few Jews are there. Lefika chala bezman hazeh afilu b'be Ezra b'Eretz Yisrael ein elam edivrayim. Therefore, the observance of chala today, even in Eretz Yisrael, is not min haTorah. So you have to observe chala in Eretz Yisrael today, but not midaraisa, for the similar reason that we mentioned before. But now, if you take a look at the tenth of the sources, mafrish and chala b'chutz laaretz b'divrei sofrim, all of a sudden, this changes. Whereas trumas, maisra, shmit, we never heard of these things in Chutz Laretz, but chala applies in full force in Chutz Laretz, mid the rabbanim, mid the briselfrim, kidei shelo tishtakach toras chala Yisrael. The people shouldn't forget to separate chala. The Rishonim explain that the reason why the chachamim, why the rabbis instituted chala in Chutz Laretz, even though chala is really agricultural, but people don't view it as agricultural. You know, trumas, maisa, shmit, that speaks to the farmers. Challah is done in the bakery. Challah is done in your own house when you're making your challahs. When you're making challahs, separate your challah. So that notion of it doesn't give off that image of being agricultural. So Chazal were concerned that we want people to keep that mitzvah even today, even in Chutz Laretz. So therefore, halach l'maisa, as we all know, we have to separate challah. Again, there are intricate laws governing challah, how much you have to separate in terms of how much dough you have to make in the first place. We'll leave that to the Rabbanim in town. I'm sure can give you guidance in terms of just when, what, precise, how to be separate challah properly. But in terms of Hafrashas challah, although min haTorah, it's Eretz Yisrael oriented, it's agricultural, practically speaking, it applies even for us. However, there is an important difference between the way challah is separated in Eretz Yisrael and in Chutz Laretz, even today, a very, very important ramifications. And that is as follows. Before one separates any of the above things that we've been talking about, one cannot partake of the food. The one exception being challah and chutz laretz. Challah and chutz laretz, you can eat first and worry about it later. You can eat your breads, your matzahs, whatever, your cookies, cakes, whatever things have to be separated challah from. And then, if for whatever reason you forgot to separate challah, it's not the end of the world, you can separate a little piece of the end. That cannot be done in Eretz Yisrael today, but that can be done in chutz laretz. It sometimes has an afkamina, a practical difference as follows. Sometimes a person bakes a whole bunch of, breads, challahs, and rolls for Shabbos, and they sit down to the table Friday night, and all of a sudden they realize that they forgot to separate challah. What do? In Eretz Yisrael, you're in a big pickle. But in Chutz Laretz, no problem. Enjoy your meal. You can eat it. Use it for Lechem Mishnah. Just put aside a little piece. Don't separate challah, because you're not allowed to separate challah on Shabbos. That's for a whole other reason. Put it aside, a little plastic baggie. After Shabbos is over, separate that as challah. So that's called ochel v'chakech mafrish. You're allowed to do that. That's a special leniency that only applies in Chutz Laretz. When one separates challah, one should be very, very careful that when you separate challah, to get rid of that challah right away. The last thing you want to do is leave that little piece of dough around. I've had numerous times the shaila, the following question, about somebody separated a little piece of dough, they left it on the side, and the kids came and tossed it right back into the batch again. And that poses a very, very serious problem, because you really can't eat that whole dough, because the challah itself is also to be eaten, and now it throws into question the entire dough. And one of the only ways possibly to solve that whole problem, believe it or not, is you have to do, catch this one, going back to Erev Rosh Hashanah, you have to do a Toras Nedarim on the challah. Namely, you have to go to three Rabbanim and say, if I would have known that my kid would have thrown the dough challah into the dough, I never would have separated his challah. Then the challah becomes retroactively revoked, canceled. Then you could start all over again, have to separate challah all over again. You would think this would never, ever happen. I've already supervised more than one of these. Just a few weeks ago, a woman called me frantic on Friday afternoon, about 20 minutes before Mincha, that she realized this had happened in the day. She didn't get around to that. And bottom line, what do I do, Gavalt? I said, quickly, come run to shul, quickly, quickly, quickly. There'll probably be two other people who are early for shul. And I pulled over two people and I said to them, I said, you won't believe this. I said, we're about to do our Taras Nedarim. I said, you see, we write prisbles in the mikveh, we're mafresh, we're matan Nedarim before we're daving mincha. We're all serving shul back in Bergenfield. Okay. Let's move on to the 11th of the sources. So the 11th of the sources is another mitzvah that at first glance is pure agriculture, and based on that idea, probably should not be relevant today. And that is in Vayikra, Poskim Vayikra, V'lechem v'kali v'charmel lo sochlu at etzem ayom hazeh, Adav yachem is kabban lokechem chukas olam adoraseichem v'chom ashoseichem. The Torah tells us that one is not permitted to eat what's called in halacha chadosh, that means new grain, anything that's of this year's crop, one is not permitted to eat it until the second day of Pesach, when the korban omer is brought, or in the days when there's no Beis HaMikdash, so the end of the second day of Pesach, one would not be permitted to eat the new grain, what's called chadosh. So I would think, well, this is pure agriculture. What does it have to do with us? The last two words have to do with us. B'chol mosh v'seichem. The Torah says that it applies wherever you are, and that raises a red flag. Wait a second, what does that mean practically? So Rashi, in the 12th of the sources, quotes a major machlokas. This is a raging machlokas for thousands of years. B'chol mosh v'seichem, Rashi quotes, Nechlu bo chachm Yisrael. There was a debate between the great Chachamim, the Tanoim, those who concluded that Chadash applies in Chutz Laretz. So any grain that grows anywhere, I guess I could say this, anywhere in the Midwest, any grain that grows anywhere in America or the Ukraine or any other big places of growing grain, the halachas of Chadash are in full force, according to one opinion. There are others who say, no, that's not what B'chomosh Roseicha means. B'chomosh Roseicha means, of course it applies in Eretz Yisrael. Only Eretz Yisrael doesn't apply in Chutz Laretz. B'chomosh Roseicha means, only after you conquer and inhabit Eretz Yisrael, not when you just walked in the days of Yeshua Benun, only after the 7 years of conquering and 7 years of dividing, then and only then does Chadash apply, but in Chutz Laretz it doesn't apply at all. So this was a major machlokes, it's still an unresolved machlokes, this has been going on for thousands of years. There are many opinions that maintain that Chadash applies in Chutz Laretz, in full force min HaTorah, and there are many opinions that maintain that it does not. The traditional practice has been, for most people have been lenient about this. This was clearly the practice in Ashkenazi communities in Europe to be very lenient about this, based on a combination of factors. That, first of all, according to many opinions, it doesn't apply altogether. And there are always a lot of doubts, there are always a lot of svekas, there are always a lot of questions as to whether any particular grain is chadash or not. The opposite of chadash is called yashan. Yashan means the old. It doesn't mean because it's old and old, it just means it's from last year's grain. So, there was always doubt. The person would walk into a bakery in Krakow in the 1500s and want to know, well, is this Chadash or Yashan? Nobody would know. So the Ramo would say, when you have a lot of doubts combined together with other factors, so the custom seemed to be pretty much lenient. So that's been the practice for most of the Jewish people until this very day. There were always those who were machmer in this. There were always those who were strict about this. There were those, the Vilna Gaon was very strict about this. Others were very strict about this, who followed the strict view that Yashan or Chadash, halachas of Chadash and Yashan do apply in full force in Chutz Laretz. What's happened, interesting, over the last 40 years or so, and I can almost date it 40 years, I think Rabbi Shulman may even appreciate this, the first time I ever heard of this halacha of Yashan and Chadash was the year when we were in high school together, because there were a group of boys, and see if you can remember this, a trivia, they were called the Cornflake Club. They only ate cornflakes for breakfast because cornflakes doesn't have a problem of chadash or yashan in it because it's not from the five species of grains.
Better memory than
so that I remember. That was my introduction called the Cornflake Club. There were a few boys who their rebbeim were machmer, were strict about the halachas of yashan. I had never heard of it. Never really on the radar screen until that point. Over the last 40 years, so things have changed to such a degree that in Teaneck, Bergenfield, you cannot get non-Yashan chalas. All the bakeries are Yashan today. It's, again, there is a yesh v'yesh, and there are different opinions, but things have changed. It's just interesting. I wasn't planning on mentioning this today, but I will just mention it. It's a min ha-shamayim that there was one individual who was responsible for this almost, there are two individuals. One was Abraham Soloveitchik, who was one of the biggest supporters of the notion of Yashan in Chutz Laretz, and the one who literally put it on the front burner for the rest of the people was a man by the name of Yosef Herman. Yosef Herman was, those of you may know, he's the Yashan man. He's the one who spent the last 40 years collecting all kind of information and everything, all the hashkachas, any hashkach in America that speaks about Yashan and Chadash, everything's based on his research. The reason why I'm mentioning it, his name now, he was just Niftar. He was just Niftar on Friday. Mamash's Levi was today in Eretz Yisrael. So he, more than any other person, put Yashan on the for Klal Yisrael in America. Again, different opinions. There are many, many people, and again, the majority of Klal Yisrael do not follow the halachas of Yashan, Chadash, and Chutz Laretz, but those who do, so are, it's based on this sugya in terms of whether this is considered to be an Eretz Yisrael type of halacha, or whether this applies in Chutz La'aretz as well. So again, in terms of the world of halacha, we try to give a little bit of a almost an overview. You can clearly see that each one of these topics is really a topic in and of itself. We try just to give the Rashi Prakim just a basic understanding of how some of these halachas play out. I just want to conclude with one very, very fascinating story to put things into proper perspective. We started the Shia about Moshe Rabbeinu and Rav Rimon, about the love of doing mitzvahs at Luis Baretz, how people throughout the years almost desire to come to Eretz Yisrael to be able to perform the mitzvahs. And it really puts things into the proper perspective that we should view mitzvahs as an opportunity. Mitzvahs are not a hardship. Mitzvahs are not something that we groan about. But it's a beautiful, wonderful thing. We hope maybe Bar HaMikdash will have the opportunity to perform these mitzvahs in their entirety at one point, very, very soon. But even right now, we have the opportunity to do them, at least according to many opinions, on the level of the Rabbanim. So in that trip we went to Eretz Yisrael 11 years ago. So one of the many, many stops that we made was one of the orchards that grow esrogim, and they were growing esrogim following all the details of the Choshmita, and we met one of the esrog growers, an older Svardi man by the name of Yaakov, and he was the type of a guy who's been growing esrogim probably since the days of Moshe Rabbeinu. He's been there so, he's like his great-great-great-great-grandfather ever growing esrogim. And he was so proud in showing me every one of this tree, and this is what the Rav said. We're allowed to do this, as the Rav said. We're not allowed to do it because it's very, very intricate what you are allowed to do during Shemitah or not. And he was so excited to show off to all the boys. So when we finished, I turned around to the bracha from Yeshiva. I said, you see such an excitement. You see that somebody's fulfilling the mitzvah of Shabbos Lashem. They used to quote from the Panovich Rosh Hashiva that when he came to Eretz Yisrael, so he used to wish good Shabbos to all the trees during Shemitah. On Tuesday, he would wish good Shabbos to the trees, good Shabbos Lashem. So I said, here you see a person who's so excited about the halachas of Shemitah. I said, you're watching Shabbos being performed on a regular weekday. It's such a strange concept for us in Chutz La'aretz. So I said, you know, Shabbos, how can you have Shabbos without Zmiris? How can you have not Zmiris Shabbos? Can't be. So I said, you know, we have to think of something. We have to come up with some kind of a song to sing as before we leave this paradise, before we leave this orchard. So we're kind of thinking, Bar Kelo? Yeah, I mean, so that, nothing like seem to fit. Come kind of Shvi. So you know what? We'll think of almost like a generic. Yismichu Machuska Shomre Shabbos. That's a pretty, you know, generic statement about Shabbos. So we had all 20 boys, and we took Yaakov around us, and we danced around the Esrogim. And that was the picture that made the biggest hit in terms of that trip. That became the symbol of that trip to Eretz Yisrael, to be able to celebrate Yismichu Machuska Shomre Shabbos, what Klai Yisrael, what our great-great-great-great-grandparents would have given just to have Trumas and Maisras, to give a couple of grapes to a Levi, to be able to dance around an Esrog tree in Eretz Yisrael. So Kadosh Baruch Hu b'chasdo ha'gadol, in his great-great mercy and love, has given us the opportunity to almost taste a little bit, a mashu, a little bit of a beginning of the mitzvah Tlus Baruch coming back to life. So we hope and pray that Emet Hashem, next year, we'll all come back to Eretz Yisrael together. So we'll have to change the whole Shia, because we'll have to give the whole Shia about how to perform mitzvah Tlus Baruch min Daraisa. So hopefully Emet Hashem will have the opportunity to do that as well.
Let's say part two of the today's program, in for those who registered, is a lunch upstairs, lunch and learn. Sawalski will give a talk probably about 10 to 1 or 1 o'clock for about half an hour or 40 minutes on the topic of chinuch, the parameters of chinuch for parents and grandparents. So even if you're not joining us for lunch, you're welcome to come back for the shiur, and that will be in half an hour. Thank you.